We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Pop Law Podcast. My name is Tyrone.
And I'm Desiree.
And we are not your attorneys.
We have another special guest episode for you guys. Today we have Miss Tequila White. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you.
Tequila White is a born storyteller with a gift for writing and a passion for helping others. Born and raised in the boogie down Bronx, Tequila received a dual degree in media studies and cultural anthropology from Queens College, then garnered experience at boutique PR firms in the country's number one media market. When she's not hustling on behalf of her clients, she enjoys mentoring aspiring professionals, flexing her writing skills, and taking in live music. As founder of TWPR, Tequila works to amplify the brand of her diverse clients. Known for combining creativity with big picture thinking, Tequila has a knack for crafting campaigns that raise awareness and drive growth. Tequila operates under the mantra, "Nothing is impossible. It's just about figuring out a way to make it happen." She launched Tequila White PR to offer her clients a more personal touch than agencies provide. This is why L'Oreal, the New York Urban League, the National Basketball Players Association, and Hot 97 are just a few of the brands who have utilized her expertise. Results-driven and determined, she has secured coverage in top-tier publications including Black Enterprise, Madame Noir, Bustle, Black Doctor, Rolling Out, 2119, Essence, Exo Nicole, and BuzzFeed, resulting in over 29 million media impressions across campaigns. Featured in Essence, BuzzFeed, and Black Enterprise, Tequila has established herself as a thoughtful leader in a public relations industry. Again, welcome, Tequila.
Thank you.
That is a lot. You have done some great things.
Hearing it back is like, oh, I forgot I did that.
So tell us, how did you get into public relations? And first, wait, what is public relations?
Yes, I'm glad we start with that because a lot of people don't know. So public relations is managing reputation and providing brand visibility for your clients. That can be through relationships with the media, so via media outreach, pitching. It can be anything from event planning, just anything that puts your client in a positive light, and also like crisis communications if something goes awry, making sure you're creating those statements to kind of bring down the crisis and get in front of it. And a lot of people get it confused with marketing and advertising, who are a part of kind of the overall family. But the difference is public relations is earned media as opposed to marketing and advertising, which is paid media. So earned meaning I pitch the client and the writer picks up the pitch and writes about it because the pitch was great and it was a fit, not because I paid to have them write it.
All right. Awesome. So what exactly goes into a pitch when you pitch a client?
So it depends upon whether I'm pitching an event or I'm pitching a profile piece on the client, or if I'm pitching something maybe like a listicle, like top three ways to do X. So I just basically start off with building out a media list that comprises of different either producers or writers, and I do research on what they write about, kind of stalk them on Instagram, see their personal life, whether they just got a recent promotion or just got engaged or just had a baby, so I can find a way to connect to them via the pitch so it's not just a blanket, hey, do you want to write about my client? Because that's not really going to get you far. It's really about building relationships with them and getting them comfortable with you. So that's kind of how I start, just doing my research, figuring out who I want to pitch. And then I get into the writing of it. I try to keep it short and sweet and just think of the five W's, like, who is it about? What is it about? All that kind of stuff. And then I kind of test the waters and pitch out to my contacts that I have prior relationships with, get feedback from them on whether or not this is something newsworthy or something they would be interested in writing about, and kind of take it from there.
So this sounds like a lot of legwork. Yes. And a lot of research.
Yes.
What drew you to this type of work that, like, you know, there's other parts of the industry that are sort of similar, like you mm-hmm. described. So what really was like, okay, PR is for me?
I think I didn't necessarily know what I wanted to do in the media, but I knew that I love to write.
Mm-hmm.
I love anything involving, you know, events or music. I just love being around that. But I knew I didn't want to do event production because you have to deal with so many different vendors.
Yes.
And it's just so time consuming. But I also knew that when it came to marketing, I'm not really big on numbers. I'm more of a words girl.
Yeah.
So analytics and all that didn't really attract me. And I liked the fact that with PR, you have to earn your
yeah.
placement, and you kind of have to go out there, try different angles. I love to write. And then when I was in school, I took a course and I figured out, oh, I can do what I'm already good at for a living. So I know I love to write and I love to plan and I love to research and I love to put things together. And those are kind of the key things that you need to be successful in PR.
You say writing, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, do you ever think about law school? Because we do a lot of writing.
Yes. I mean, I know kind of how to get my way. So I feel like
mm-hmm.
I could be a good lawyer. And I know that I'm always kind of fighting for people, especially in day to day. I'm fighting to get my clients coverage.
Right.
I'm fighting to make sure they're in the right rooms, in the right places. So I kind of see a comparison. But law school, I wouldn't have made it.
So that's interesting. In undergrad, I was a PR major. I started off political science, then I switched over to PR. I hated political science, but, you know, ended up a lawyer. So it is a little bit of crossover. So how do you make your clients stand out from everybody else in this digital social media world?
I focus on the why. Everything I do, I focus on social impact primarily. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a foundation or a nonprofit in terms of giving back to the community, but I make sure I only work with clients who are impacting their community in some positive way. So it can be a consumer product, it can be an app, you can be a blogger, you can be anything, but as long as you're giving back to your community in some type of positive form of fashion, I feel like we will align and I'll be able to pitch you really well because I'll care about what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to always start off with the why, even when it's a consultation, before I get into like, where do you want to see yourself? Or, you know, what are you up to? What are your likes and dislikes? I really try to figure out why it is that you're doing what you're doing. And that's where I pull out for my pitches what makes that person different, because everybody's why is going to be different because everybody had a different upbringing, had different experiences. So I really like to figure out why are you doing what you're doing and what kind of impact are you trying to make in the lives of other people. So when I'm pitching them, everybody's story is going to be different and I can really kind of get people's attention because I'm focusing more on the emotion behind it
mm-hmm.
and less behind just cover it because it's cool. So that's kind of where I always start. And if I'm feeling frustrated or pitch is not getting picked up, I kind of go back and see, is the why in there? Like,
yeah.
are people understanding why what they're doing is impactful? And I think once you let that be your North Star and kind of always go back to the why, you'll be good.
I have a question that sort of plays on the why. So why did you decide that it was time for you to go out there and do it on your own instead of, like, you know, working with maybe a larger agency
mm-hmm.
or, because I know that briefly before we were recording, you were talking about entrepreneurship versus, like, you know, building up your brand with a larger, like, company.
Yeah. It basically came from necessity. It wasn't really a choice.
Mm-hmm.
I want to, in the future, be able to work for a great brand that I feel like our values are aligned and does really dope stuff. But after I graduated, I had completed internships while I was in school. I got really great grades. I had really great relationships with my professors. I applied. I did everything I was supposed to do. But I was either getting, I had too much experience for the entry role, or I didn't have enough for the role right after that. So it was kind of like, do I sit and wait for someone to give me something, or do I go out there and create opportunities for myself to grow and create relationships in this industry? Because that's all it's really about. Figure out how to become a stronger writer, figure out, make my mistakes early when I'm not attached to an agency. So it's not like the team will have, you know, a negative impact. It'll just be me. So if I make a small mistake, I can take that on the chin versus the agency losing a whole account. So it really was out of necessity. It wasn't that I don't want to work for an agency or I don't want to work for a brand. It was just more so the timing of everything. And then when I started really building up my experience, and brands were like, oh, I want to work with you. It was kind of like, I kind of really don't need to work with y'all because I'm doing this on my own. I'm successful. I can sustain myself financially. I'm growing in terms of my relationships. I'm able to work with the clients that I want to work with. I don't have to be on an account that I'm not passionate about. So it kind of became, okay, well, now it just has to be the right fit. So it kind of flipped it on its head to be, instead of me asking brands to hire me, more so maybe taking on a contract role where you guys are working on a really dope.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end,
what will I become?
Senua Saga, Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Campaign, I want to be a part of the campaign, but I don't necessarily want to be your employee.
Yeah, that's great. So how do you decide to take on clients in your own, you know, practice?
Well, first, most of my clients, I have a personal connection with them. I know them. I know that I can vouch for them. I know that they're good people. I know that what they're doing, they're trying to impact their communities in a positive way. Or I'll just be reading stories and I'll be like, oh, let me bookmark this. They seem like they do something cool. Let me look more into what they're doing. Pitch them, see if they're looking for public relations services, see if they already have a communications team in place. And if not, see if I could offer some type of value to them that they don't already have. So it's kind of a mixture of just meeting people day to day and then just looking through, reading things and seeing cool things and wanting to pitch them. And then also after we have an initial conversation or consultation, just seeing where their mind is, where their vision is for the next 3 years, 5 years of their business, how they want to grow, whether or not they're ready for public relations. Because, you know, in the beginning stages, if you don't have your business in order, you definitely don't need to be looking at a publicist.
Right.
So, you know, if they don't have the assets, if they don't have a bio, if they don't have headshots, if they don't have a website, if they don't know, you know, where they're trying to go, they need to figure that out before I can effectively pitch them.
Right.
Because it's going to be all for naught if they get a bunch of press. But then when people come to them and say, oh, I saw your story in XYZ outlet, how can we partner? How can I support you? And they don't have their business in order, then it's pointless kind of for me to do all this work.
And then just to follow up on that, you said that a lot of your clients you have a personal connection with. And so that sort of harps on the importance of networking. And it's particularly in your business. You had mentioned this before, but how does someone who's trying to get started in this industry, what is like some effective ways to start networking, to start making connections when you feel like everyone already knows each other and you're like, how do they start talking? So what are some like ways that you found were really effective to start to get to know people, to start building up a client base?
I think it's a combination of social is great, but that face-to-face interaction is where the money really lies, because people get to know who you are as a person and they get to be able to figure out if they can vouch for you. They can see how you move in a room with other people, how you interact with other people. So going out to events and being strategic about figuring who's going to be at that event and making sure you have a list, like, I want to talk to these three people in the room and introduce myself and give them a business card and follow up with them the next day and set up some coffee to meet with them. Don't just go to go with intent. And if you're going to a panel discussion, don't go to a panel discussion. Come late and sit in the back. Make sure you come early, sit in the front.
Right.
Make sure that after the panel's over, you go speak to the panelists. It doesn't have to be a long conversation. You just introduce themselves, point out something they said that was impactful to you, and then maybe follow them on social media and say, you know, I really enjoyed what you said at the panel, and kind of just build a relationship organically, because a lot of the times people feel like, well, if I'm not in the cool kids club, you know, I'm not going to be involved in things. But they weren't always in the cool kids club. They had to kind
of build that. Everyone wasn't there.
Yeah, they had to build that relationship. And I just feel like it's important to go in there open, because a lot of times when you go to events and you're not with a friend, you kind of feel like you don't know how to jump in a conversation. Yeah. But a simple smile and hello will do wonders for you. If you're standing there either not smiling or in the corner, no one's gonna like pay attention to you. You kind of have to start off with one person just saying hello, introducing yourself, and taking it from there. And those are the type of relationships that if they do work in corporate and they are working on a project, they will remember you and say, oh, I remember that such and such did this and they were super nice to me. So I'd rather go to them than a stranger and try to put money in their pocket first. So I think a lot of times when you hear networking, you feel like it's super daunting, but it's literally trying to meet 1 to 3 people at each event and focusing more on quality than quantity of people that you meet, because there's a lot of people that I go to events and I see them at events all the time, but I have no idea what they do.
That's so,
like,
so
you're
true.
Always at an event. You're always posting that you're out, but I don't know what you do. So I feel like if you just meet 3 strong people that know what you do and can get to know you on that level, then that will be super valuable to you moving forward in both ways. And you want to make sure that you're providing value too. So you find out what they do as well, so that if there's an opportunity that you can plug them in, you can do that way. So they'll remember, like, oh, they didn't have to look out for me like that, but they did. So now I'm going to return the favor.
So what are some obstacles that you deal with working with talent and trying to pitch talent?
I really try and stay away from talent. I try to stay away from entertainment. I try to stay away from that because, one, if they're super early in their career, they don't have money to pay you.
That's all he knows about that.
Right.
They don't have money to pay you because they have to pay their managers, they have to pay their agents, they have to pay all types of fees and things. And then you're kind of at the bottom of the totem pole in terms of press, which kind of drives the money that can pay all the other people, which is crazy. So I try and stay away as much as I can. But when I do try to work with talent, it goes back to the why. So I try to figure out, okay, there's a billion rappers, there's a billion on-air talent people, there's a billion people who are doing what you're doing, so what makes you different? And I try to manage client expectations. So saying, you know, you just started, so don't expect to see yourself in Harper's Bazaar next week. Managing expectations is key, and saying, you know, you were at level zero when you got here. So a few blogs, a few appearances, you have to do the groundwork and work your way up to where you want to be and put the work in and focus on your relationships, focus on building your brand, focus on making sure, you know, you're being timely, making sure you have good communication skills in terms of email and phone conversations, making sure that those things are in place first, because all it takes is one job
to change
everything. Yeah. So it's like, if you're not ready and you're not doing the little things building up to it, it's just going to crash and burn. So I kind of try to make sure I'm focusing on the bigger picture with them and focusing on making sure everything from styling is right, everything from, okay, if you're going to be out with your friends, you might not want to post that, or you might not want to post every single thing that you're doing, because you want people to feel connected to you and feel like they know you, but you don't want them to know too much of you.
Yeah.
Because when I start off talking to them, like, who would you model your career after? The people that you tell me, you have to kind of follow what they would do in a situation. So if you want to be like the next Beyonce, the next Rihanna, you don't see them getting into no Twitter beefs. You don't see them commenting on people's photos and mess. You don't see when something goes down that they're in the middle of foolery. Right. You see that when foolery happens, they're out there getting their money, they're minding their business, and they're still personal and you still know who they are, but you kind of have to focus on when someone says your name, what do you want to be the first couple things that they say? Do you want it to be like, oh, they work really hard, they're really kind to me when I meet them? Or do you want to, oh, they're always in some mess, they're always in some foolishness, like they don't show up on time, they had a nasty attitude? You don't want that, because you're not going to get far, because everybody knows everybody. So if you piss one person off, you're blacklisted, and that's it.
Yeah. Right.
News travels fast.
Very fast, especially in this city.
How important do you think it is to sort of have Black men and women behind the scenes in roles like yours when you are a Black brand or like a Black talent? Because there was this article recently, and I think the New York Times, and it was talking about the importance of the diversity representation, I think it was, about the importance of having Black people in these roles, because they sort of help determine the longevity of other minorities in these roles in the future, because, you know, it becomes a cycle where you just hire the same people over and over again. So can you sort of speak to that?
Of course. Well, my industry in particular has a really terrible diversity problem. Right. So we represent maybe about 8 to 12% in terms of publicists in the entire industry. And I know that lawyers have a similar issue in terms of diversity with Black lawyers, especially Black female lawyers. Mm-hmm. So I'd say you see it every day when a company does something and you're just like, bruh, like, were there no Black people in the room when you decided that this was gonna really do it? Like, no, it really wasn't, because I just feel like it's important to have diverse opinions, whether that be Black, whether that be women, whether that be gay, whether that be anybody that has a different perspective. I think it's important to have all those voices in the room so that you can see how a snapshot of how each group would react to whatever campaign you're building out. And I think it's important when you're building out your team to kind of see yourself reflected in your team, because they're going to be the ones to tell you, well, kind of maybe we should rethink that, or maybe, you know, we could go about it a different way. Because when you have a team that may not necessarily look like you, they might be saying, yes, this is great, because they don't know any different. Mm-hmm. So you need kind of that team to kind of check you and give you the real and be like, listen, nah, that's not going to fly. Because it's very different working when I come on board to teams, maybe if I come on the corporate side of things, but I'm a contractor for a particular project, and I walk in as the only Black woman in the room, and I can kind of look at things in a different way and give that voice of saying, well, have you thought about X, Y, and Z? Because you guys think that it's going to go this way, but I can tell you 9 times out of 10, it's going to go that way.
Right.
And they may not listen and may mess up, and then it may go bad or may go great, but just having that person in the room to be able to say, let's take a step back and look at other case studies of how they did not listen and how it ended up working out for them.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times I think it's weird, because sometimes I feel like they do it on purpose to get us upset and talking about
bringing,
it.
People to them and their brand.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of times it's that, but sometimes they really just don't get it. Like, they really are just oblivious to things, and they really just, I feel like the things that are more overt, like the news and stuff like that, they knew what they were doing. But there are little intricacy things that happen, like with Shea Moisture that time, where it was just like...
And that's a Black brand.
Right. So it doesn't even have to be a brand that's not white. It can be any brand. Like, just having people in the room to say, here's my perspective of how it could potentially be offensive, so let's kind of rework it. I think that is super duper duper important, to just have diversity across teams, across all industries.
And I think speaking to that, having that diversity, but giving them the room to actually speak and make change. So have you had any experiences working with brands when they brought you in for a particular reason, and then, you know, just having you as a face, not giving you really any authority?
Yeah, I feel like I kind of been lucky to get those opportunities through friends or people that know me. So they kind of vouch for me and they allow for me to have the opportunity to speak. But I've definitely been in rooms where I felt like the token. I felt like, okay, you brought me on board, but then I say something and no one responds, but then the next person who looks different from me says it, and you're like, oh my God, that's such an innovative idea. Like, we should totally do that. And I'm just right. sitting there like, 5 minutes ago, I said that, and you guys were like, oh, we'll think it over. Like,
That's infuriating.
Yeah. And then when it's successful, then they get the credit, and you just have to be like, it's cool. Because it's not even worth going in and saying, well, I thought of it, because it's just like, if the team won and it was successful, get your check and you go on your way. Because I feel like you have to pick your battles. You can't, you know, fight for every single thing. Now, there's definitely times where I do speak up and I'm just like, listen, this is what you're not going to do, because I'm a part of the team. You brought me on for a reason, to provide value.
Yeah.
So you're going to respect what I say, and you're going to treat me with the same respect that you treat everyone else.
Right.
And usually when I do that, it kind of level sets everything and I don't have an issue moving forward.
Yeah.
Because sometimes a lot of people are afraid to speak up and they're afraid to be the angry Black woman in the room. But I just feel like I don't lead with emotion. I lead with facts. So I say, you know, I have been successful X, Y, and Z times. You brought me on to provide value because I have expertise in this. Mm-hmm. And I know what I'm talking about. So listen to what I'm saying, as opposed to be like, you guys never listen to me. Because that's not going to like get you anywhere. Yeah. Because this is business. It's not emotion. So it's not personal, even though it is. But you can't really lead with that. You have to always come back with the facts and the stats to show, like, I provide value, so what I'm saying is valuable and you should listen.
Absolutely. So, you know, we're talking about branding. How do you protect your brand from a legal standpoint?
Well, from a legal standpoint, I make sure I always have, you know, agreements that are looked over. I make sure if I'm partnering with anyone or coming on board with someone, if I feel something in my gut isn't right, I have someone else look over it. I make sure I track all my payments. I make sure I send all my invoices. I don't do anything where it's kind of just like, oh, you can just Venmo me or just send me give me cash, and it's no way to track. I try to make sure that anytime I'm providing a service for someone, we agree upon the terms beforehand. Mm-hmm. They're signed off, so that there's no gray area when something goes left or someone doesn't pay me on time. It's like, you knew there was a late fee. I don't have to go. I don't have to go and text you and be like, oh, you're late. Like, when you see your account, you'll see that you got the late fee. Like, I don't go back and forth with people. I don't argue with people, because while my work is very personal, because I talk to my clients almost every day,
right.
I'm not, like, necessarily their friends.
Yes.
So it's like, I'm not going to sit here and, I mean, life happens. So sometimes family members get sick or people lose their jobs, and I can understand that. But what I'm not going to do is go back and forth and argue with anyone over something that they signed. So if, you know, sometimes people are not happy with how quickly they're getting coverage, or they're saying it's been 2 months and I've only gotten X amount of coverage, I say, listen, like, we discussed and we managed our expectations beforehand. So and nowhere in that contract it said you will have 20 placements by the second month. So I don't really feel, I feel like when you handle things the right way legally, you can rest easy and you cannot feel stressed, because you know that you're covered. When you're kind of flying by the seat of your pants and you're just doing things more loosely, then you have to be a little worried, because you're like, well, we didn't really put this in writing, or we didn't really agree upon this. So now, like, are they gonna blast me on Instagram? Are they gonna now try to sue me? Like, we never really talked about this. So I think it's super important for all entrepreneurs to really make sure they have their business in order and all their legal things in order before they try to even interact with anyone.
Right.
Just to protect themselves, because, you know, you can be great with a client 1 week and then the next week they could flip on you. Mm-hmm. And right. It's just like, oh, like, we was cool. Like, I didn't think you was going to do this. So just protecting yourself before it gets that way is, like, the best, because there's definitely been times where I'm like, wow, like, we've been working together for 6 months and you show me this person, but then one little thing goes wrong or you don't get something on time and now it's like a different person. But because I know I have my shit together, I'm like, all right, well, go on, girl. That's fine. We can end. We can end
non-disparagement clause in this agreement. Sue you for defamation, for sure. Okay.
Yeah, so what I'm hearing from you is that even if you have a legal person, legal-minded person involved, maybe help you draft a form that you use to deal with your different clients, there's still amount of a certain contract literacy that you have to be able to look at and be like, something don't look right here. So you can't necessarily just farm it out all the time. Sometimes you got to take the time to sit down and read it, because sometimes the contract is just, it's plain writing. It says, when is the money due? What happens if the money isn't paid? How should the money be delivered? Like, those are some of the basics, and you got to be willing, and it may look scary, and you have all of your indemnifications and your waivers and all that type of stuff in there, but what I'm hearing from you is that you need to take your time and read it, and then once it goes over your head, maybe you can go get a lawyer or a paralegal, someone to read over it. So is that what I read?
Yes, that's exactly what I mean. I mean, when you're drafting up agreements, if you don't know or you have to question, make sure you check, because you don't want it to go out and you're like, oh, I don't need to read that. Oh, that's not important.
So you're saying it's worth spending the money on the lawyer.
It's worth spend now so you don't have to spend later.
Right. And spend more later.
When you're in court, having to pay for the lawyer, paying for the fees, paying to go back and forth to court for something that you could have just literally wrote two sentences.
She's
and you
would have
been,
right,
been good.
Where can I send my tithes and offering? Because, ma'am,
I'm just saying,
this is what we tell the people every week.
You gotta pay for protection, okay? You gotta pay for protection, because these people out here will try you. They will try you, and you will not see it coming. That's what's really the craziest thing, because it'd be the ones that you feel like you're the coolest with.
I don't make no agreement.
That you'd be like, just send me this crazy email with all these expletives up in here. Like, I thought she was my girl.
And that's when you go, when you whip out that agreement, you're like, I know we have this disagreement, but this is actually covered.
But per section, X, Y, and Z.
I'm good for as per. Okay, I'm good for as per. I'm petty. I will highlight it.
Do you need me to send you a copy?
Okay.
Cut and paste. Put it right in there. Fix it up. Look real nice.
Then happy to discuss after you read it.
Very happy to hop on a call if you would need to, because these people are crazy.
All right. So, you know, before we get out of here, just tell the people where they can reach you. And one, you already told them, have they stuff together before they contact
Please,
you.
Please don't waste
Have
my
your
time.
Website. Know the direction you want to go in. Yes. And then contact Tequila at?
Yes, you can find me at TequilaWhitePR.com. You can find me at TequilaWhitePR on Instagram, and then Tequila with two L's .White on Instagram. That's my personal page.
All right.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much
for
being here, Tequila.
Me, guys.
I very much enjoyed the conversation. Thank you for trekking all the way from the Bronx, sis.
No, anything for y'all.
And thank you for telling people to have a legal shit together.
Have it together, pay for it.
They don't listen to the lawyers, but you listening
to
a brand.
It's too late. And then they're like, it's too late for you now. You messed up.
Well, if you want to make sure you have your stuff together, you know where to find us. As usual, we're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and that is at Pop Law Podcast. Where else can they find us, Desiree?
Our website, www.poplawpodcast.com. Listen to us on iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Spotify,
Stitcher,
Google Play,
Alexa, Google Home, your Amazon Dot will get you us in your ears, basically.
So with all of that, please remember, we are not your attorneys.
Everybody loves McDonald's fries. So yes, you accused your mom of stealing some of your fries on the way home. But the bag did feel a little light. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.